Hey, welcome to the show. We have an interesting one today. I'm going to talk a little bit more about beauty and how it takes your breath away. Okay, I won't sing. But it is an important topic, how we have to see. We have to see and know something in order to love it. And they're trying to dirty your eyes and your mind. Next, we talk about Fetterman, that debate, and what's changing as we move towards the midterms. And what's changing is momentum. The emperor wears no clothes, and increasingly people are talking about it and saying it out loud, even moderates and Democrats. Very good development. Not the end of the world for us in either way, but it's a good development, good momentum that we need to build on in the future. And then third, we are governed by psychopaths. I know you probably already know that, but we need to talk about it because they are actually retaining such people in the institutions and breeding them while kicking out all the decent people in these toxic work environments. That is enough of a summary. Let's get on with this show. Hey, I want to follow up on some bits from last episode. I want to talk about beauty again. And I do this with mixed feelings, by the way, because there's a lot of like airy talk in Great Books Land about, beauty and the beautiful. And it's like, okay, yes, beauty will save the world, Dostoevsky says. Like, okay, what does that mean, right? What does that mean? I tried to hint at it last time. And a lot of these things, we just lack the capacity to understand the old words that were technical. And so I can't, if I talk about it in the language, the old language, the old lore of the West that's been lost, then it comes off as technical philosophic language, and it bores the tears out of everyone, mainly because we just don't understand it anymore, and we don't even have a common language to speak about these things, which is really disturbing. And a sign of where we're at. So what I want to talk about today is just one point, and we'll move on to other things. And that is that real beauty doesn't sort of care about an audience. It simply radiates. It takes one's breath away simply by being what it is. It draws everything to itself by merely revealing itself. Does that make sense? It merits the love it naturally draws forth by simply being known or seen. So the idea is that, that I proposed last time is that they're taking away your ability to receive that, your ability to have your breath taken away, to feel real wonder about the world, to feel that excitement, to delight in beauty in a way that propels you forward. That's exactly what they are deadening. And ultimately, you're talking about, love of the good, right? We have this love, but it's propelled forward by knowing or seeing the beautiful thing. And that's what they want to destroy. They destroy it in many ways. One of them is to deaden your senses, so you can't really even perceive the thing. I'll give you an example, what used to be a more common example, I think, at least among more traditional-minded people, which is that you can say you don't like classical music. Classical music, whatever the hell that means. There's a lot of different kinds of music within that umbrella. But the problem is you really haven't heard it if you're, whether you like it or not, you don't know, because you haven't heard it if your ear is deadened by only listening to certain kinds of music, which is like, eating a lot of candy and then saying like, this steak is fine, but I'd prefer hamburger. Your taste isn't developed. You don't know what you're looking for. You don't see it. You don't really hear it. And if you've ever gone through this experience where you do develop your taste, your senses, which usually means dropping a bunch of crap for a while, and then just exploring and forcing yourself to explore and examine, some of these other things. All of a sudden, a whole new world opens up, right? A breathtaking world. But they deaden your senses. So you can't actually have your breath taken away and be drawn towards beauty itself and its kind of radiance. I hope that makes sense. It makes sense to me. But let me give you some old wisdom on this. This is good old you know, St. Tommy, Tommy Aquinas. He says, good is the cause of love as being its object, but good is not the object of the appetite except as apprehended. And therefore, love demands some apprehension of the good that is loved. For this reason, Aristotle says that bodily sight is the beginning of sensitive love. And in like manner, the contemplation of spiritual beauty or goodness is the beginning of spiritual love. So accordingly, knowledge is the cause of love for the same reason as good is, which can be loved only if known. In other words, you got to know or see the thing to love it, right? And the more you love it, the more you want to know and see it. It's just like with a person. The more you love her, the more you want to know about her. The more you want to be together, to be as one, and take that and apply it to everything else. That also goes to knowledge. That also goes to wanting to know more about nature, the universe, the world around you, you know, whatever it is. So you gotta be able to see. And what they're doing is corrupting your ability to see. And that is a problem, right? And so you have to protect your ability to see these things, to see the truth. It's already out there, but you know, if you got mud in your eyes, you can't see it. This is why we need to kind of fast or abstain from a lot of the garbage around us. Then a new world opens up. We can start to focus on things that are truly beautiful and that enrich your life. You'll be a happier person. There's kind of a modern way of knowing that gets in the way of this. And this is also a deep problem. And in this account, we assume principles first. We don't derive them from things that are out there, and we sort of impose them on the world. But the idea is that knowledge begins with doubt, not wonder. Like, you don't need to pursue things because you find them attractive, or, you know, what are you talking about? This is all airy fairy stuff. Really, the way science works is that we doubt and then we hypothesize. And we begin with doubt, and then we impose ourselves on nature instead of receiving what's given from it. If you're receiving your truth from what's around you, right, then the sight is really important. If you begin with doubt and say, well, I know nothing and I can know nothing until proven, it's a totally different way of proceeding. So, you know, the modern way is just to ignore beauty altogether in this process. And, you know, the problem is that your intellect is going to need to receive things from outside regardless. If you assume that the mind is creating reality or the principles by which you see reality, that's going to get you into trouble because it's a lie. It's a lie that renders you sort of as God, and you're not. And you're really receiving these principles by which you understand the world from outside, and you're pretending you don't. So you end up a fool in the end. You know, the intellectual life doesn't start with principles or things created by human beings or their minds. It comes from our perception of what's around us and our desire to know more. So we don't create things ex nihilo out of nothing, right? I mean, we use other elements around us to make things like this table or these clothes. When we try to do that, we end up blind to the actual causes behind things, behind the world around us. And let's give some examples of this. One example I used a long time ago was, I remember being at the Grand Canyon and for the first time. I was on a road trip with some friends in college, and there's an entrance, you know, if you've ever done this, through which all tourists drive. God knows what it costs now. I remember last time I was there, I thought it was just ridiculous. I don't know, it was like $20 or something. And I thought it was ridiculous that anyone, and venial and base and disgusting, that someone would charge money to see the Grand Canyon as if it was some kind of, you know, Disneyland amusement park. I don't mind, you know, paying for the parks, but something about that really gets to me. Like, you have to pay to see the ocean. I'm like, what? It's just ignoble. It's disgusting. It really bothers me. But anyway, so we did that, and we drive through, and there's this first balcony where a lot of people stop, and there are a lot of people outside, you know, getting out of their cars. I think it was summer, probably, or late summer. And, you know, these people were a lot of them were foreign, so there's like many tongues or Tower of Babel thing going on. But everyone from all over the world, when they walked up to the balcony and saw the Grand Canyon for the first time, all the chitter chatter just sort of stopped. There was just silence and awe. The first reaction was, whether it took your breath away or not, was to shut the hell up and just receive. Just look at the thing. Did not know such a thing could exist. There's no attempt to describe, you know, or impose upon it, like, oh, well, this was a blah, 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 geologic work. And that's not the path of wisdom. The path of wisdom is to simply receive, to seek out the things worth knowing and seeing and gaze at them. The reaction was natural, right? Everyone just was just silent. They were just beholding it, delighting in it. They're full of wonder, awe. That's the beginning of wisdom when it comes to the intellectual life and the sort of pursuit of virtue that I'm talking about. You see something and go, I can't believe this person was actually this good and they did this thing. That inspires me. I take it in. And that propels you forward. Those moments are why the best scientists and physicists keep going, because they have them. They're not sitting there as, you know, the technocratic mindset. I mean, they have these moments and go, I can't believe this exists. Right? I'm just going to behold it. And now, as I investigate it, as I see it more closely, I'm going to see what I know and what I don't know and move forward. Or in your personal life, how can that person, like, they did this incredibly good thing. How do they get there? How do they do that? Why are they so happy? I mean, that's it, right? You have to know, you have to see it. So, you know, when you look at the Grand Canyon and say, you feel small, you feel humble, as you look out at it, and also full of some kind of delight, right? You want to see it. You want to just behold it. And that means that, you know, you don't start by your own little, lighting your own little match in the darkness and looking around. You start by receiving what's out there. And that means that you have to defend and protect your ability to see, your ability to know. And that's what they're mucking up every day. That's what they're messing with as they throw ugly images into your brain, into your heart, into your mind, and the hearts and minds of your kids. That's what they really want to get to. They just want to dirty all that, pervert it. They don't want them to be able to see and experience the glory of the world as it is, the beauty, truth, and goodness that's already out there that would propel them forward in their own life. So, you know, I mean, you think about this when you not only neglect truth and beauty, but you denigrate it. You gotta do a better job of building the walls up to protect yourself and your kids. And I say this, you know, not from a pedestal. I say this from someone who's just trying to do it themselves in the same way as everyone else. But it's important to remember what the goal is. And the goal is, in the middle of, you know, humdrum life and existence and anxiety and worries and whatever else, these glories, these beauties exist. They exist in the people around you. They exist in, you know, the things people have made. They exist in the old books. They exist in the great innovative things people are doing. And we have to focus on those, and we have to keep a wall around the rest of the crap. And it's that positive focus, that moving forward on those. I think that's where everyone gets messed up, because we don't even know what to focus on anymore, right? But you need those examples. You need to highlight examples of virtue in people's lives, highlight examples of good people have done in the past. This is why Christians talk about, you know, having a person who is also God, right, as the exemplar in the person of Jesus Christ. This is, if you don't have that kind of, not such as mentors, it's like seeing these examples. And if you're not consciously doing that when it comes to what you consume, when it comes to, you know, the art, the music, everything else, you got to set up walls on certain things. I'm not being, you know, I know you can't be crazy about it, and I'm not saying I do it perfectly either, but you got to set up walls on certain things and start to channel everyone in the family, or your own life towards the better stuff. Not for, you know, again, this is so that you experience, you know, joy and delight in ways beyond, break out of the routine crap life that you know, we feel when we're down. So you become happier and better. It's not some you know, condemnatory thing that I don't want to get across that vibe. This is about turning towards something that can just, you know, blow your mind in a wonderful way in the midst of the madness. I think that gets to most of what I want to say about this. You should realize this, even if you, you know, not religious at all. There's something about what I'm saying that might be made more clear by talking about the Christian conception of the very end of everything, of the very purpose of human life. And here, I want to quote Aquinas again. I think a lot of Christians would agree with this. He's talking about whether there's delight in contemplation, like contemplating, meditating on something, ruminating on it, seeing it, gazing upon it. Is there delight in that? And the objection is maybe there's not. There's no delight in contemplation because delight belongs to the appetite of power, whereas contemplation resides chiefly in the intellect. Therefore, it seems there's no delight in contemplation. Delight is in, you know, your desires, not in the mind or reason or the intellect. And Aquinas answers it this way. The contemplative life consists chiefly in an act of the intellect in the broad sense, like your reason, the way your reason can see. He's not talking about like reasoning, but he's talking about the way you can see stuff and know stuff. It has its beginning in the appetite, but the end corresponds to the beginning. The term also and the end of the contemplative life has its being in the appetite, since one delights in seeing the object loved, and the very delight in the object seen arouses yet a greater love. Chicken or egg, you delight in seeing the object loved, and the delight in the object that you see arouses a yet greater love. This is why I say progress. It progresses. It makes you move forward. It makes you grow. So he quotes Gregory. He says that when we see one whom we love, we are so aflame as to love him more. And this is the ultimate perfection of the contemplative life, namely that the divine truth be not only seen, but also loved. Seeing and loving, right? They go together and they reinforce each other. And so what are you seeing in your own life? What do you kids see in your own life? And I mean that in the broad sense. What are you learning? What are you knowing? What are you putting in front of yourself? What are you listening to, right? Again, this isn't to condemn. This is to say what's going to propel you forward is seeing those things that you know are higher, that you know will make you happy more, is going to make you love them more. It's going to make your life easier because what will happen for you and your kids is, or just you, is make it so you don't even want this other crap. Right, you regard it as the disgusting thing it is, or just the stupid thing it is, and you start really taking delight in a whole new world. Ultimately, for Christians, this is talking about God Himself, contemplating, seeing, and loving the Creator. I think that's good. I mean, this also applies to artists, right, in a special way, because. There you want to constantly be creating the anti-environment, as McLuhan says, away from all this this other stuff, and just exploring, you know, this world of beauty outside of the usual garbage, and protecting yourself as well, or at least, you know, carving out parts of yourself where you aren't under that constant bombardment of garbage, and you know, you're making these explorations or resources or experiments in sort of a protected place, trying to develop your own sense, your own ability to see and know. I'm going to stop there. There's a lot more to say, but I hope that clarified some things for you. Okay, so we got to talk about something a little uglier than beauty. And this has been percolating for a while. We're in the middle of a very restless time in this country. You can feel anger building every day. And I want to talk a little bit about what's breaking out into the open. You know, I'm sure some of you have seen this. You know, first off, the mind reels at how insane things are. The outright lies about what happened with the virus. You now see not just a backtracking, but just outright lies. Like, no, we didn't do that. We didn't do the thing that we did in the virus. And actually, Ron DeSantis did the thing that you're saying we did with the virus. Like, there's no even question. It's a complete blatant lie. And it's bewildering. I mean, There's an article, last week in the Washington Post that was hilarious about how regular exercise may improve the effectiveness of the coronavirus vaccine. So I'm not even going to explain that. I think you can figure it out yourself. That is, you know, completely idiotic. And the fact you're even publishing that is sort of insane. Maybe exercise helps you get through COVID. Maybe people who were in shape didn't have any problems were always going to get through COVID. Maybe we already know that. This is in the Washington Post, right? I was looking around last week I'm sure this happens to you. It just sometimes just weighs you down when you look around and see how insane it is. Charlie Crist is the guy who said, Governor DeSantis is the only governor in Florida history to shut down the schools and lock down businesses. What? You got him, Charlie. You know, you go. I'm not going to explain that. We don't need to explain what's the problem there. And then, of course, there's the matter of cognitively impaired candidates and officials at the highest level. You have a president doddering around who needs to be led by handlers, who's suffering from dementia or some form of senility, and he's the leader of the free world, and we're supposed to say that's okay. You have Kamala Harris, who's basically reciting D-minus community college papers all the time, and that's her speech. She just seems completely incompetent and can't keep a staff. And then you have, guys like Fetterman, God bless him, running around like literal stroke victims running for office who can't get through a sentence. And you look at this and you say, you throw down your hat, as Bob Dylan said once, and you say, do I have to be like that? Like, why am I part of this? Why am I part of this? What is going on? Now, yes, it's all that bad. It's all that bad and worse, and it's going to get worse. But what I would say is, I was joking, maybe the Democratic Party should just run cognitively impaired candidates, because then they can claim, if there's any opposition, that they're being bullied, which is what they were trying to say with Fetterman. But here's what's happening. And here's what's happening that I think is a good thing and interesting, and we need to encourage, even if it's not the be-all end-all. People are getting to the point where the emperor wears no clothes, right? We're at that point. And what happened with the Fetterman debate last week was definitely this. You just saw everyone watch that debate and kind of say, even the cucks, even the moderates, right? Even the lefties watch that debate and say, what? No. I mean, I saw a polling focus group afterwards, and it was a Democratic gal who was very much pro-abortion. She wasn't going to vote Republican, but she was asked if she'd vote for Fetterman, and paraphrasing, she's something like, I hope he gets better. I hope he gets better too. But what was good, the silver lining in all this, is that you got a lot of people who never voted Republican, right? I mean, and who cares? Like, the Republican Party sucks. We all know this. But who never voted Republican, but who now are just like, this is now a matter of like basic competence. This is a matter of remembering what they did to us. The outright lies, and that don't believe your own eyes, and you can't talk about what's in front of your face. That kind of stuff, people are angry. I think it was Michael Brennan Daugherty said, he had something on this. I think he had a column or a tweet where he was saying, this was the moment that kind of opened the floodgates to be able to say, this can't go on, right? And certainly, obviously, the powers that be are going to continue with the lies and everything else. They're going to double, triple, and quadruple down. But what you see is a growing coalition of people who realize this isn't about Republican versus Democrat. This is about, this is about getting back on the people who are this incompetent, the so-called compassionate rulers of America, who run old men with dementia and stroke victims as candidates, because after all, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. All these candidates have to do is vote the right way. And since they're in charge of all the institutions, it's clear which way the current moves. So they don't care. I mean, they don't care. They don't need prudence or wisdom from these people. They just need them to go along, and everyone knows what the right way to go is. And you just go along with the overlords, and it's all going to be okay. Well, it's not going to be okay. And I think there's a lot of people who clearly are waking up to this fact, and they're very angry. It's what I said in the Glenn Beck show a few weeks ago when we analyzed the midterms. You can do all the rigmarole you want. You can look at, all kinds of polling and issues and blah, blah, blah. And there's ups and downs. There was sort of an up for the Democrats for a little while. But at the end of the day, there's a sort of calculus here where you look at all the factors And all the factors lead in one direction, and that is, this is going to be a bloodbath. This is going to be a red tsunami, if you want to call it that. I'm not sure how far that goes, but it's going to be a red wave, a large red wave. And there's nothing you can do about that. And that's good. That's good because people are doing it not because they're pro-Republican, right? I mean, even the base doesn't like a lot of the leaders for good reason, but because they see these other people and are like, no, we've had enough of you. We have had enough of you because it's gotten to the point where it's so obvious, it's so blatant. Now, it's a good thing if there's a red wave. Does that mean everything, you know, swings back in some way and you know, we win? No, it does not, unfortunately. The entire crisis that we're in the grip of could be defined as the power, you know, the power that these people have is so great that in your face, in front of you, they can put a president in office who is, you know, doddering in his basement and doesn't know what time it is or which way to walk, and nothing happens, right? They can run a Fetterman. They can lie to your face about what they did with the virus restrictions and what they did with the vax and get away with it, at least in blue states, right? So I don't see, and even if they, you know, they there's a bloodbath and they lose, which they are, they're going to scream about fascism and about illegitimate elections in a worse way than they have. Like, they're not going to stop. Like, the elections aren't going to just tame them alone. So it's not, and of course, then the Republicans, what are they going to do after they win? You know, I mean, but the only way out is through, and the only way to push the Republican Party is to use them as the blunt instrument to just pound the left on the head, knock it out, give it a little concussion. It'll get back up like a zombie and be back in full force in 2024. They're already gearing up for that and calling it an illegitimate election already. So, you know, don't worry about that. But this is the way to use the Republican Party as a blunt instrument to just knock down the ruling class and punch them in the stomach. And that, I think, is increasingly an appealing option to a large number of Americans, in part because you get these moments like the Fetterman debate where it's just, you know, it's just stomach churning, and you see, you can't believe this is your country. And at first you can be in denial about that for a while. It's in your interest for a lot of people to be in denial. If you admit things are that bad, it changes the calculus for the rest of your life, and it's a pain. Plus, you're not allowed to say these things in public if you're in a lot of professions. So you stay away from it. But there's only so far you can go, right, where you're going to lose, I don't know how many people, but you're going to lose a lot of people, enough to get slaughtered in the midterms. So that is a good thing. That needs to be capitalized on by everybody. And, you know, there needs to be an understanding that you can't just be doomer about this. I know Republicans suck. That's not the issue, right? This is just the first step. The ultimate solution probably won't be anything in elections. But this momentum that is picking up, that's going to explode in November, is something that needs to be capitalized on for the sake of a larger commercial cultural play and movement. And that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in seeing this realigning cultural shift where people who voted for Bernie a few years ago are now big Ron DeSantis fans, where people are questioning what else do they lie to me about when they discover, like, they get red-pilled on one of these issues. That is very interesting because it makes for the potential for a commercial cultural movement, for media that people gravitate towards, that is that is very different than that of the Borg. And by the way, no one gives a crap about what these people are saying, right? I mean, MSNBC is, as Glenn Greenwald was saying the other day, a lot of these shows, it's like a mid-level YouTube show. That's how many people they have watching, and they're all old. And then you look at Tucker, and he's got more Democrats watching his show than any other show. I mean, this tide is turning, this realignment is happening, and in that commercial cultural space, that's where we can really wreck house with the political momentum that's going to come of the midterms, where again, it's not about voting for Republicans, it's about using the Republican Party as a blunt instrument against the left. That is going to happen. And what we do with that is the central question moving forward. Of course, new leaders will arise who are politicians. That's great. But I encourage you to look at it as more than politics. This isn't just about, it's about sticking it to them, remembering what they did to you, remembering that this is your country. And the way to take it back is to vote them out straight down the ticket. It is a protest vote. It's a revenge vote is what it is. That is, goal number one. That's important. But the momentum from that is not just going to be channeled into, you know, political stuff. No one's coming to save you as the great leader in politics, going to swoop down. I don't care. It's just not going to happen anytime soon. It's not going to be a Caesar coming in anytime soon. You know, maybe as things progress, there's not going to be, you know, one man in a world. I just don't see it right now in the big, bad way people desire. What needs to happen is you push the party in this way, but then you start looking at this momentum in the rest of your life, and we start putting together some of these pieces, especially in media, to draw different audiences together, move people forward, and you know, create space for a realigned, a different coalition of people who are willing to stand against this idiocy and this malice that now lurks, you know, within the hearts of all our major institutions. Yeah. So, you know, so this is one of those accelerationist moments where the Fetterman debate, a lot of other things going on are just, you know, just doing the Lord's work. They're helping people stand up and say, no, I've had enough of this. This is insane. More of that, please. I'm all for it. I am all for adding to the ranks of those who stand up and say no. You know, I said on Twitter a little while back, a declining education, educational system, and the strivers' imposter syndrome of previous generation of elites has evolved into something completely different, a kind of completely confident psychopathy. This is what the institutions increasingly retain and foster and breed, is a collection of kind of psychopaths in an environment that breeds them. It's not even arrogance. There's no sense that they're wrong about anything. I mean, it's like beyond arrogance, into the psychopathic territory. And as I said then, I can tell you it's dangerous, but increasingly you see it every day. And this is not a like a talking point only, or a very online, you know, Twitter post, or I see this and I hear people talking about it who are, you know, directly in different sectors of the world right now. And I mean, you can see it in the military when they talked about having a toxic, you know, problem with leadership. They've been talking about that for years. What you're doing when you get the good people out, when you kick the people out who stand on principle, the people who have generations in their family that have all served and now are saying, no more, I won't serve this regime. You know, you brag if you're the CIA about having the bipolar woman who has imposter syndrome. You brag about the impairment. And what you end up doing is, when you grab all the PC or identity politics type people who affirm this nonsense, is you bring in a kind of class of narcissists and psychopaths who, you know, breed each other, and they weed out the good people increasingly. So many good people want to leave their job or whatever they're into because of how toxic the work environment is, because these people are terrible and they will seek you out and destroy you if you are normal and good. I don't know. I mean, it sounds harsh. Maybe you've seen this in your own life in some capacity. I bet you have. But what I'm telling you is the kind of, you know, the DEI stuff and all that. I mean, it's beyond like race and sexuality. I mean, what they're breeding is a certain kind of a cat who acts in their life through that lens, that lens of the wokeness. And if you look at what that is and how that works, their own groups, right, the lefty groups, as people have been talking about this year in various articles, are falling apart because of, really, I mean, you can say it's intellectual disputes within their movement about who's more woke than who and who offended who. But really, all that is, those are weapons that psychopaths use. I mean, it's a great weaponry for someone who's a lunatic, completely doesn't care about anyone around them. And they use this weapon to get ahead and to battle each other and to get rid of people. And, you know, as someone said to me about this tweet, it's very true that At least if you have imposter syndrome, which is, if you don't know, when you you attain some position and then you feel insecure, like you don't really know what you're doing. At least with imposter syndrome, as Josh Abitoy said on Twitter to me, one of our employees here, at least that shows some kind of humility. Like it's if you think you're not worthy of the task, then it might propel you to make yourself better and to become excellent because you're worried you're not. We're at the level now, though, where a lot of these people, they have no doubt about their rightness. There's not even a standard to which they hold themselves. They just know that they're correct and they're just acting, you know, for their own interests. Now, the good news to this is that kind of, organization and that kind of, talent retainment system is not sustainable. In some ways, at least it has severe problems because you do get rid of a lot of people who are competent and are able to maintain some kind of stability, long-term planning and so forth. But, if you've got a powerful institution, you can keep a bunch of terrible people around for quite some time. You're just going to have a kind of churn and you have to change organizationally a little bit where you have, in a way, a more hierarchical system where there's overlords who master the little masses of crazy people who are all backbiting and fighting each other. And it becomes like a power hierarchy in a way that's, I think, very unhealthy. But in any event, it's not a matter then of just finding and retaining talent, right? It's because what they're doing is pushing talent out. They're pushing good people out. And the people they are retaining, a good close relative of mine was just telling me about this in a military context. The people they are retaining are the worst. I mean, that's what happens if, the kind of the wokeness takes over an institution. They're going to keep the worst kind of people. And I'm not talking about sexuality or race. I'm talking about the personalities. This is a phenomenon you're just going to see more and more. You see it more and more around you when you look at the leaders that we have. And, you're like, how do they get there? Look what's going on in the UK. Look at all these places where a lot of times they're not very impressive. There's high turnover. Increasingly seems like no one's in charge, right? And that's because you've created these toxic environments. I mean, Kamala Harris can't keep a staff around for more than 5 seconds, right? So you're just going to go through churn and increasingly who's going to come to work for you? Yeah. I mean, this is a systemic problem is what I'm saying. I want to say that publicly. And it's what institutions retain and sort of breed now within themselves. And again, the way it comes out now is, they're all woke, so they're all fighting and this doctrine or knowledge doesn't work. What I'm saying is the way these people have shaped their souls doesn't work, and it's pernicious. Now, one last scary thought before we go on this. These are also the people who increasingly they're retaining while kicking the good people out, who will go along without any kind of moral standard or compunction to orders from above if they see it as aligned in their interest. These are the people who, you say, if they're in their military, would have no problem taking bold, unconstitutional measures to crack down on all the dissenters out there who are on the other side. That's what they're selecting for. They're getting rid of anyone who would stand up on moral principle to say no. They punish people who do that, and they're bringing in the people who, yes, are psychopaths, but are also people who would do the bidding of those in power for the sake of power when they see it as allied in their interests, which is exactly how it will go down and is going down. So what it means is you're radicalizing these ruling class institutions, and you see it all over. You see it in the academy, you see it in the newspapers, right? And the lunatics are running the asylum, and in fact, like the asylum is retaining more and more of them and kicking anyone good out. Now, so it's a race, right? It's a race against what they can do with these powerful institutions to double down, triple down, and grab power and create a one-party state. How long will it take them to do that? And how their own incompetence in many cases making the things they run fall apart. The things they run have a lot of momentum. They have history, they have money, But pirates who've taken over a ship, they're going to use all those resources to change the frame of things and create a one-party state. And the question is, do they run out? Does their incompetence let them run aground before they do that or not? And that's the situation as I see it. And it's just important to think about this this soul problem or personality problem of what we are literally breeding in these arenas. One easy example is to see it in politics. Look at LA County politics, if you followed any of that. These people are all bad. I mean, corrupt, crazy, narcissist and worse. I mean, and you just get a window into, some of these institutions, whether they're businesses or political communities, and you see the same thing. It's the same kind of syndrome over and over. So be on the lookout for that. We need to think about how to create healthy institutions and work cultures that avoid this as it sort of presses in on us all around. And there's an enormous opportunity to pick up all the good people who don't want to be in these environments anymore, who are leaving the military or who have left the academy, know they can't get a job, who have left their big woke corporation business or want to. There's just a lot of good people who, if we band together, we create new things, we can be happy and we help save the country at the same time. So that's the hope. That's the future. Thanks. Hey, I hope you enjoyed that episode. We are going to talk a little bit here at the end. I just want to give you some updates on what's going on. I'm at New Founding, top secret, but I'm going to let you know about it. We are building something that will help match ultimately investors and entrepreneurs, as well as other elite relationships that need to happen in this day and age. But in the beginning, this is elite talent. So if you want to get out of your big woke corporation or wherever you are, and you are an exceptionally talented person, you have a track record, and you need to be placed somewhere else, let me tell you, there's a lot of people who are looking for you and would love to hire you, and there maybe are new paths and new ways of life that you can actually leap into. But we know how hard that is, given that they're going to try to cancel people, and no one can really put out a public flag to say, hey, this is what I want to do and where I want to go. This is why I want to do it, either on the side of employers or, people looking for potential work. We are building something that will be simple, a technological solution built completely off their grid, that will be safe, simple, and effective to match talent with employment. And that's just the beginning of a variety of real practical little tools we're going to start rolling out as the platform develops in the background. So look forward to that. I wanted you to know about it. That is in development now. Great tech crew. Also, I should say, SuperPac, American Firebrand, we just launched a C4, Firebrand Action, which just partnered with Heritage Action of the Heritage Foundation. Wild to say, I never thought I'd say it, but Heritage Foundation is making some interesting moves with its new leader. Kevin has been very friendly to me over the years, and I respect him immensely. I think he has a job to do to make that place better, but it looks like he's doing it. Separately from all that, Heritage Action and our team, our great Firebrand team, reached out and had a discussion with them. And they are supporting, they're doing a lot of good work, right? They're supporting the right people, attacking the right people. So Heritage Action, we put out a video that really can educate the voters in Arizona about Mark Kelly and the problem of illegal immigration. I mean, we called it Arizona, We Have a Problem. And the description reads, the death toll from open borders keeps climbing. The people of Arizona are suffering, yet DC Democrats are nowhere to be found. And the ad urges voters to call up Mark Kelly and tell him in Arizona, the senator, exactly how they feel about Biden's open borders. So this was a great moment. It's a great ad. I encourage you to check it out. Many other thousands of people have at this point. I guess this will air later, so I won't reveal the numbers, but the numbers are good. And it's a great beginning of the kind of partnerships that really our incredible media team can establish and help with, not just between now and November, but beyond. So if you are listening and you're interested in that kind of thing, reach out. We have an incredible team of people who know how to message, who have been around, and some of them are young, super sharp, and have been around. Some of them are older. But this is, that's what we pride ourselves on. And we do it behind the scenes a lot. But I wanted to share that with you because if you don't know about American Firebrand, the Super PAC, or Firebrand Action, which you probably don't because it just came out, you should. And you should go check that out. You can check it out on Twitter, @amfirebrand, @amfirebrand. You can check out stuff from both Heritage Action and the Super PAC there. Other updates around the horn. Remember that Align is changing and is going to have more content coming out on it. And we have a men's and women's newsletter that really are great. So, as I look at Align right now, I see headlines like 14 colleges resisting wokeness. What are the 14? Theology of Home with Carrie Grass. Theology of Home is an incredible operation that they make products that are non-woke Catholic, but a lot of the stuff is Catholic plus. If you're Christian, you'd be interested. We have an article about Halloween, Make Use of Your Fear, very interesting, by Matt Himes, really smart guy. There's a lot of practical stuff that's coming out on here. And the newsletters, when you get the Align newsletter, which is free, you can, go and subscribe at align.newfounding.com. The newsletters really have a lot of just useful information. We just did something about Ulta and its wokeness, and a lot of women responded and said, thank you so much for this information. We don't just talk about the companies that are bad. We then give you practical alternatives as to what's good. What we're going to build the line into is going to blow people's minds. But for now, this is just this is an incredibly useful newsletter and growing website that just has content on it that's going to help you make decisions and choices about what you buy. So you stop buying products from people, products and services that hate you, and start just finding better alternatives that are out there to big corporate. And that's how we begin to draw blood. If you join Align, there are hundreds of thousands of people, with you, subscribed, and it has an incredible engagement and a click rate. It's not spam. It's the real deal. The writing is good. The people writing it they have more on the website. These are not like, this isn't like some, some grifty kind of like newsletter selling, vitamin supplements and all the other crap they sell on the right. This is about looking at the big dogs, these big companies that have done terrible things, and giving you real alternatives to stuff you didn't know about that's quality, of all kinds of items, and then starting to build a directory of those companies online, and starting to show lifestyle content online that's useful for everyone who wants to move in a different direction. And the people who are writing them, Helen Roy, she has a podcast and a series of articles on Align where she's going to different women and talking to them about all kinds of interesting stuff, women who are marching to the beat of their own drum away from the kind of insane area that the feminists led everyone into. And it's very interesting. Helen is one of the best young writers on the right. We helped build her up at The American Mind, where she is an editor. She's a mom, a fairly new mom, and she is a very interesting writer. She's not a saleswoman, writing a grifty newsletter. She's providing real value to people and a great writer in her own right. And then Matt Himes, incredible background. This guy has, worked for some of the big media dogs, and he is very thoughtful, very smart, writing for men. The section provisions on stuff you might want to buy is not, again, a matter of like, we're going to have special deals with all these businesses and throw up stuff that we can make a ton of money on fast. It's a thoughtful analysis of, this is the kind of thing you need. This is the kind of thing you might not think about. This is products and services that help you live a better way of life that are off the woke grid. That's what it's about. And I would just encourage you, if you haven't, go to align.newfounding.com and sign up, check it out, help us. And right now helping us is just subscribe and, be part of the growing community that's ultimately going to create a directory that's going to scare the hell out of the bad guys, and more, so much more. But that's enough for now. And that's my update. As always, newfounding.com. If you want to support our efforts, you can join us as a member, and the bennies will grow as we grow. There's a lot that we have in store that we haven't even revealed yet. As always, thanks for listening. If you can give a like or, you know, whatever the hell, you know, a comment, review, you know, on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, that's always appreciated. I hate to say it every time, but I'm not going to forget and keep on you, because if you do it for, it just takes a few seconds. They tell me it helps us out a lot. So far, I've been just so grateful for all the responses and comments and things people send. Don't hesitate to reach out if you want to get in touch with me. The best way to do that is on Twitter at DOCMJP. You have a great rest of your day.